Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be here today moderating a webinar discussion on how to navigate the murky waters of phone calls in an era of call blocking. It's definitely getting more and more difficult to use the phone to get in touch with individuals today, between calls being labeled as spam or fraud and carriers being given the power to automatically block calls from being connected. Agencies can no longer be guaranteed that when they place a call, the other end of the phone is going to ring. Today, we've assembled a panel of executives from the credit collection industry who are here to share their strategies and insights for navigating this new dynamic to try and get people on the phone. This webinar is being sponsored by VoApps. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the Army industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, publishes a number of email newsletters, hosts great, awesome webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the Army industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use. It is a great source of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you all spend a few minutes checking out what it's got to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Robert Blair is currently the Director of Data Systems and Contact Strategy at Valor Intelligent Processing. At Valor, Robert is responsible for managing the data systems and driving the company's contact strategy. He's been in the ARM industry for more than 10 years and is focused on using analytical data to increase performance, efficiency, and revenue. Alan Clayton is the Chief Operations Officer at Frost Arnett. He is responsible for all facets of operations, including first-party, third-party, and shared services for the company's offices in Nashville, Campbellsville, and Houston. Alan has more than 30 years of experience in customer service, collections, and project management in a variety of fields, including healthcare, credit cards, nearshore outsourcing, regular outsourcing, and insurance. Matt Kiefer is the Chief Officer for Information Development and Compliance for the Preferred Group of Tampa. He is a past president and current vice president, again, and education chair of the Florida Collectors Association. He served on the board of the National Healthcare Collections Association, was a member of HFMA and MGMA, and is also an ACA scholar and fellow. He has been in healthcare and collections since 2001. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing and once the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available later today or by tomorrow on AccountsRecovery.net's webinar recordings page. Finally, before we get to the discussion, I wanted to ask everyone a favor in advance and to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Your participation helps make sure that I'm developing content that's what you're looking for and finding the speakers, much like the ones we have today, who are the people you absolutely need to be hearing from. With that, let's start today's discussion. And I thought we'd start out sort of getting each of our panelists to weigh in and sort of assess the landscape as it pertains to call blocking today. So on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being everything is awesome and 10 being the sky is falling, how would you currently rank the state of affairs in the credit collection industry as it pertains to call blocking? And maybe provide a little perspective and share, talk a little bit about how that number has trended in the past 6 to 12 months. Alan, since you're up on the screen, maybe you wouldn't mind going first.
Sure, thank you for that. Well, starting back in about August of 17, actually, that number really took a nosedive, at least in our world. We've been battling ever since then to get the numbers back up to pre-August of 17 levels. Every step we seem to take generates a short-term lift and a slow drip back downward, so we're really constantly adjusting our plan. We measure the results of each of our calling campaigns, and really, depending on the strategies you're using, to answer the question directly, you know, some companies could be at a 10 and some could be at a 1 based on where they're at. I'm going to probably say the industry right now, if 10 is sky is falling, is somewhere between, at least in my opinion, a 7 or an 8.
This is Matt. I'll just speak on behalf of our company, but I'd say we're probably at a 3 or 4. Our auto dialer uses the do not call list from the FTC to check to see if our number has been added. And so for the calls that we use our ATDS portion of the dialer on, and we have cell phone consent, obviously, we are in 2019 at the same number of block calls as we were in 2018, but we're only a little past half a year now. With the apps out there like UMail and Hiya and the continuous changes and improvements, along with the carriers now enabling the technology to block robocalls, I can see that this problem is going to be ever increasing going forward.
Hey, this is Robert. Mike, I want to say thanks for having me. Yes, I would agree with the other panelists. You know, I'd say about a 3 or a 4. You know, obviously, we make small improvements, but you know, with the latest kind of decision or ruling that the cell phone companies are going to be blocking by default. I think less than a month ago, AT&T is kind of spamming and blocking kind of by default for their customers. And you know, like Mike said, we have the Hios and the other kind of call blocking apps, and then each of the carriers are offering kind of a paid service or kind of a light free service to be able to kind of block our calls. So, you know, for us, we're at about a 3 or 4. Obviously, it could get a lot worse, and we're, you know, kind of working around with strategies to try to prevent that from happening. But you know, over the last 2 years, I feel like that number has definitely trended down with some of the rulings that the government and, you know, the Fed have come out with.
Trended down, Robert, meaning things are getting better or things are getting worse?
No, I'd say things are getting worse. You know, overall, if you look holistically over the last 2 years, I think that, or even over the last year, things have trended a little bit down. Our RPC rates have trended a little bit down. You know, obviously, you know, each of us are kind of doing things to try to prevent our calls from being blocked, and the strategies we'll probably talk more about, you know, in this webinar. But I feel like that over the last year, it's definitely gotten much harder for us to be able to not only reach the consumers that we need to reach, but identify which phone numbers are being spammed or blocked, and really, you know, knowing how to strategize around that to prevent that.
You know, it's interesting that everyone, you know, saying things are getting worse, because the amount of government involvement, the amount of focus that, you know, Congress is putting on robocalls and call blocking and the Federal Communications Commission, you would think that things would hopefully be getting better. So I'm curious to, you know, if anybody has an opinion as to whether they think it's just the efforts that, you know, the government is trying, whether they're just not working, or whether they just haven't had enough time to work, or whether they're going in the other way and actually making things worse. Does anyone want to tackle that one first?
Well, I think one of the biggest problems is the lack of clarity that it presents, because, you know, we're at the infancy stages of this. So you got all these different call blocking apps out there, and the FCC just recently requiring shake and stir, but the carriers have till 2020 to adopt it, or the end of this year. So, you know, they're in different stages of development. Then you have the it's called the Stopping Bad Robocalls Act, SBRA. And that passed the House of Representatives, but, you know, we don't know where that's going to be going or if it's going to change, because everything's still kind of in a state of flux. It leads to more questions than answers at this point.
What do you think is going? Yeah, go ahead, sir. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I would agree, you know, with Alan on that. I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, not sometimes, a lot of the times when the government gets involved, it kind of murks the water up a little bit more than it was before, even though they're trying to help. But, you know, I think the biggest issue that kind of we face regarding this is, you know, we're all consumers too. You know, none of us want to get these, you know, the spam and the robocalls that we get about our car's warranty. I'm sure everyone, you know, on this call gets those. You know, your car warranty is expiring, yada, yada. So, you know, obviously we want to try to prevent, you know, the calls like that, the IRS scams, the scam people. But the issue is just, you know, the legitimate companies that are kind of getting wrapped up in this, and really the opinion of the public and the government to say, you know, who's to say who's legitimate and who's not? You know, and I think that collection agencies kind of get wrapped up in that sometimes when obviously we all know we're an integral part of the economy. You know, so to kind of put us in that category of scam or spam isn't really fair. And I think that we kind of get rolled up into that, you know, a little too often.
Yeah, this is Alan. I agree with all of that. I mean, just this week, I personally received the Social Security scam call, the auto warranty call. Just listened to one from Romania that came on my voicemail, and I'm on the do not call list. So it that doesn't stop. You know, it depends on if we can get the government to really go after the bad scammers and figure out a way to keep the legitimate businesses like us out of that muck.
This is Matt. I'll just add to that, you know, I am encouraged by the work of like trade associations like ACA International and other businesses to just to ensure that there's protection, or they're working with the FCC to make sure there's protections and they explain our case, and, you know, they can basically help the FCC understand the unintended consequences of, you know, the rules and stuff that they're making.
I agree with that. We've been working with the CRC as well in that same thing, talking directly to the government and giving them insight. And one of the things that they said to us directly was, as a company, don't be in the shadows. They said, talk to us. We want to help. We want to understand what your businesses are facing. So work with us and help us. Don't be in the shadows.
Excellent. Well, we're a few minutes in, and the questions from the audience are already coming in faster than I can keep track of them. So let's. I want to remind everybody, if you have a question for Matt, Alan, or Robert, type it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll do our best to get to it at some point during between now and when the webinar is over. Just to sort of get the ball rolling, I wanted to. The first question that came in was a question on how do you measure your block numbers? I was wondering if anybody could provide some insight into that.
Hey, this is Matt. Go ahead, Matt.
Sorry about that. Our dialer has it's called an ANI checker, and basically it goes to the FTC database. Now, that's just for the do not call that the government puts out. This isn't the other apps and stuff, but for the FTC do not call list, it's basically pulling them in and seeing if our number's been added. That thing is updated, I believe, every day. If it's not daily, then it's weekly. But it pulls that data in to see if our number's in there, and it'll give me the instances of where our numbers was added, the date, and it'll also give me the reason, like if they put scam or debt collector or something like that, it will tell me what it has. But that's just something you got to work out with your dialer technology company. As far as the apps themselves, and Mike, I'm not sure if you put up a screen. I'm just on the call, not on the computer, but T-Mobile has a website for their app that a business can put and add their number proactively to make sure it's marked as legitimate or at least verified in the caller ID portion.
Yeah, I was going to to add to that. Yeah, I mean, we're kind of doing something similar, you know, to that. But as far as how do you know if your call is being blocked, you know, with all of the different apps and all of the different carriers, you know, it's really tough. I think that the person that solves that is going to be a rich guy, you know, to say, hey, we can check to see if our number is showing up as scam or spam or blocked on all of these different apps and all of these different carriers. I don't know if that's possible or if it can happen, but you know, if some programmer wants to tackle it, you know, by all means, I'm sure we'll all pay him a lot of money to figure it out. But the you know, basically the only thing you can really do is just really look at your data and look at your data every day. You're not going to be able to see exactly what's blocked and exactly what's showing up as spam and what's showing up as scam, but you can see in the numbers, you can see your contact rate drop, you can see your conversion rates drop, you know, and then also just kind of getting the feedback from the agent, specifically when it comes to scam likely, spam likely, the tags that we're all kind of dealing with. You know, the agents can't really help with the call blocking side of it, but, you know, I make sure that I reach out to our agents at least, you know, once or twice a week to be able to, you know, hey, you know, what's the feel like? You know, they come to me and say, hey, this guy said he almost didn't answer the phone because we showed up a scam. And, you know, we're kind of able to mitigate that. And in addition to, you know, calling yourself, you know, I call myself with a sampling of numbers, you know, every day to try to determine which of our numbers are showing up as scam or spam. And, you know, obviously with all the members of your staff, you all kind of have different carriers and, you know, different plans. So you may be able to, you know, call one member of your staff kind of every day on a sampling of numbers to get an idea of, hey, is it time to swap that number out? Is it time to switch that to a different number because it's showing up on, you know, spam likely or scam likely on, you know, three carriers or whatever. So really just kind of staying on top of it and digging into your data daily is the best way that we found to try to identify those calls.
Yeah, this is Alan. I agree with all of that. We have actually engaged with a vendor that is able to show us which of our phone numbers is showing as spam or scam across all the different carriers. Really, they haven't been able to do anything on the app side yet, but we are actually working with them. They've been able to clean up our numbers and register the numbers with the carriers. If one number today or whenever gets tagged, and we're notified of it from our representatives, because that is something that we also ask frequently, and we ask them to proactively tell us if they're told, then we'll contact that vendor. They will actually then contact the carrier or carriers and lobby on our behalf, and they've actually got direct connections into the carriers. So that's been very helpful. We've seen our connect rate as a result of that effort increase, just our connect rate increased 20-30% by doing that versus doing the not protected phone numbers. And I agree with all that. So that's been one of the big things that we've been working real hard with as well.
This is Matt.
Hey, if you don't mind me asking, are you using, is it Neustar that you're using?
Yes, we are.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, we've done some tests with them in the past and haven't had a chance to actually use the product, but it's good to know that you're seeing good results.
We are.
Didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, Matt.
No worries. Appreciate it.
This is Matt. I just wanted to mention that website I was talking about. It's calltransparency.com. Now, that may be tied just to T-Mobile, but you can register your number for free, create a free account for your business, and any numbers that you put out there that would show in caller ID, just list them in there. And right now, you know, it would be nice to have one that's national for all of them that they have to subscribe to. I'm not sure if that one is just for T-Mobile, but it's calltransparency.com.
Excellent. Thanks, Matt. Thank you, everybody. Really loved the discussion so far, and I'm just going to hit the pause button briefly, and I'd like to invite Todd Santa Maria from BOAPS as a sponsor of today's webinar to say a few words. Todd?
Thanks a lot, Mike, and thanks to all the panelists. This is certainly a topic that we're anxious to hear from all these experts about because it's such a important and possibly destructive issue facing the arm industry today, and we're always looking for insight about what can be done, how we can help, hopefully find technology that we can provide to the industry that'll help combat what's happening here. The FCC has kind of mandated that all these carriers have their own native software that's going to block by default any call from a number that's not in that phone's contacts, emails, or texts. And the way that it's currently handling, most of those apps are currently handling it, is that it sends those calls directly into the voicemail platform. If your agents are only going to be able to call around and not get any live connects and just end up leaving voicemails, we feel that we have a good solution for that. Our clients currently are using us to deliver thousands of messages or hundreds of messages at scale so that you get the word out to everybody. And those that are ready to talk will raise their hand by way of calling back in, and you can use the agent's time more efficiently to have conversations with those that are ready for resolution. If anyone wants to talk about it or learn more about what we do, please email me at Todd, T-O-D-D, at voapps.com. Thanks a lot, Mike, and thanks again to the panelists.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Todd, and thanks again to VoApps for sponsoring today's webinar. Really appreciate your time and your support. More questions keep coming in faster than I get them answered, which is awesome. Really love all of the activity from those of you listening in. Wanted to tackle another question that's come in from the audience. For someone coming back to the industry after a few years away, welcome back, first of all. What are the most effective and compliant 2 to 3 strategies that you would recommend employing right now? Robert, maybe you'd like to go first on this one.
Sure. Yeah. So, as I said before, the easiest and most effective strategy that we've found is just, you know, swapping your numbers out as frequently as you can. You know, obviously that can get pretty expensive, you know, multiple projects if you're using local caller IDs and whatnot. So you really have to kind of weigh the cost benefit to say, okay, where does it make sense? I mean, if you're using local caller IDs and you have a bunch of your inventory in one spot, you know, one state or one city, it may make sense to swap that out a little bit more than, you know, your smaller markets. It seems that your spam tags and your scam tags and your blocking is a result of, you know, volume. So, you know, any of your numbers where you have a lot more volume, you know, those are the numbers that you need to swap out, you know, more often, because the more volume you're putting out on the network, the more, you know, likely you are to get tagged as a scam or spam or get blocked. So that would be the first one, in my opinion, is swapping out that number as much as you can afford it and as much as it's still effective from an ROI perspective. And secondly, like I said before, also just kind of looking at the data and staying on top of your RPC rates and your connection rates. And, you know, like Alan said, you know, there are vendors out there that can help try to, you know, whitelist your numbers and work directly with the carrier. So those would be the three things that I would do immediately. You know, obviously the last, you know, cost some money with, you know, using that vendor, but, you know, the ROI is there from the numbers that I've seen.
This is Matt. I just think that, you know, one of the strategies you should do is, you know, basically employ multiple communication channels. Not just, you know, an ATDS or a dialer, but I mean, we use VoApps, the sponsor of this. We also SMS and we use email. And that's important because that's the preference that they're leaning to. A lot of people don't want to speak to a collector anyway, regardless of call blocking technology. They don't want to speak on the phone anymore. They want to be able to communicate in a time and a manner that's convenient to them. I also mentioned registering on the calltransparency.com. You know, it's a free account. Maybe it only helps with one carrier, but that's one other thing that you can do. And one other thing I didn't mention is with an app, for instance, like Umail. Umail has the ability to send out a false code that says you're not, well, it's basically the message is your number's been disconnected. And that result code to your dialer may get imported as an invalid or, you know, number out of service, whatever the result code come back. There can be many that, you know, don't result in a right party contact. So one of the things I would do is, first of all, if all your eggs are in one basket and you're just using your dialer to make leave outbound messages for the calls that you have cell phone permission on, I think that's a going to be a losing strategy, because you're going to get these result codes back as people use an app like Umail and they send out these false codes back that your number's been disconnected. So the first thing I would do is I would look at and analyze, probably audit some of those, spot check them, but have a strategy where you're not just leaving messages, but you're manually calling, you're doing link back lives, you're doing VoApps, email, SMS, and mix it up a little bit. But certainly you want to go back and audit some of those result codes if they're coming back as invalids. And if the trend is that those result codes start increasing as far as invalids and disconnects or disconnected phone lines, things like that, that I think you will catch the ones that are getting caught by an app. What you can do about it, obviously it's going to depend on what comes out by the FCC and these various regulations that are coming out, and hopefully there ends up being a national database. I'm curious, on the Neustar, I'm sure you probably have to pay for that service in order for them to proactively go out there and do that. It might be worth it. And I've heard, I think, of another one. I think it's called Numerical. I think, I'm not positive, but I think they do kind of the same thing.
Matt, this is Alan. Yes, that's correct. We looked at both of those. They provide a fairly similar service. I will say that one of the things that we did to go on to add on to all of that, we compared local caller ID packages with toll-free numbers. We have seen, at least recently, that the toll-free caller ID numbers seem to return a better return rate, a better incoming call rate, and a better answer rate than the local caller ID. I don't know about you guys, but if a local number is not in my contact list, I'm not going to pick it up. And if they don't leave a voicemail, I'm certainly not going to call them back, because they're likely somebody from Romania trying to get me to check on my social. The other thing that I would be cautious of, as we've talked to the different vendors and such, is that if you do change numbers a lot, one of the things that we've been advised is that if you change numbers too frequently, that could be indicative of similar to a scammer behavior, because that's what they'll do. They'll take a new number, they'll throw out thousands of numbers at once, and then they'll move on. So you can do that, because we do also change numbers, but you have to be careful about doing it too frequently, because you could actually trigger a scam alert on the carrier's applications and the carrier's alerts. But
I agree with that. And
The toll-free numbers seem to result in more perceived credibility, and we've been able to again get better, more people answering that call, as well as more people calling back.
Now, obviously,
go ahead, Matt.
Yep.
I was just going to say, I agree with that. As far as not answering the phone, it always seems to be somebody you don't want to talk to. So let it go to voicemail. If it's important enough, they'll leave a voicemail.
Or they'll send a text.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to follow up, Alan, because you mentioned changing numbers too frequently. That is can be a very sort of subjective time frame, too frequently. Is there any sort of rule of thumb or guidance that you can provide in terms of what might constitute too frequently versus the right time frame to change your numbers out?
Sure, that's a hard one. That's something you've got to keep a close look on your numbers. With us working with that vendor to keep our numbers clean and not being marked as spam or scam, that seems to have helped as well, because we don't have to change our numbers as often. We've also found that the more history a number gets with the carriers, the less likely they are to be marked as scam. Our vendor has actually worked and talked directly to the carriers on our behalf and has had to explain the difference in the collection world versus other worlds. They really didn't understand our world and the fact that we're going to be sending out different numbers possibly for different clients. We're going to be sending out different numbers for different reasons and different campaigns. They didn't understand that. So trying to get them to understand and grow in their knowledge on that has been a side benefit, a kind of unintended side benefit. But we've been fairly aggressive with our vendor, and they've been fairly aggressive with the carriers in helping get those numbers and keeping them clean. So we've actually had to do it less now that we've been working with them. But I will say, if your numbers aren't tagged and are not somehow protected, that's a hard one.
Excellent. Good information. A question, I want everyone to sort of put on their lobbying hats. With the TRACE Act and the Stopping Bad Robocalls Act and the FCC taking efforts to help control robocalls, what elements should the industry be lobbying Congress to get included in bills that would be beneficial to the arm industry? I know, for example, that ACA International has really been pushing, this notion of not sort of the legitimate robocalls or legitimate calls versus, sort of the illegal calls, and trying to make sure that the legitimate calls don't get sort of wrapped up as everyone's talking about robocalls. How do you sort of, make that distinction to someone when you're having that conversation that, you know, the calls that these, you know, you're making are legitimate, they're legal, they're important, you know, and they need to be sort of segmented somehow, because, you know, I remember the FCC did a robocall summit last month, I think, and one of the carriers mentioned that they're never going to be able to, you know what a call is about. They know the number the call is coming from, or it's supposed to be coming from, but they're never going to know what the content of a call is. So how do you sort of get that point across that they need to sort of be able to kind of figure this out? If they're going to be blocking calls, they can't just sort of do it, you know, sort of by default, because it's going to cause a lot of problems for different industries, including the credit collections industry. So I'm curious if there's any insight or any ideas that you might have, you know, that as these companies in the space go out and maybe lobby or have conversations with congressmen or regulators, how to sort of get that point across?
Well, I think things like Shake and Stir are going to help. And people who aren't familiar with it, Shake and Stir is kind of like blockchain, where a call originates at the person who's making the call, and then it goes through different networks, but it gets verified every step of the way. And at the end, the receiver is going to know, on based on the caller ID, that whoever's calling them is in that caller ID and it's been verified. And I think that's going to help with a lot of the scams, because they're spoofing numbers, your local area code, calling you from overseas, whatever. A lot of those are spoofing numbers, and that's going to help with that. But I think the other thing we have to do is basically point out unintended consequences and think of things that could be unintended consequences that would hurt the consumer. And I'll give you a personal example. I had signed up in testing all these things for many, many months now. I've had Hiya and Umail on my phone. Now, my phone actually, I think, comes now with Hiya, but I actually signed up for Umail. With Umail, the voicemail, if they leave me a voicemail, it doesn't get left in my phone. It actually goes to Umail, and you have to use the app to go get the message and listen to it. I had noticed Wells Fargo had called me. Of course, it's, you know, during a meeting or something like that, and I let it go to voicemail twice. Well, that was over like a two-week period. I never called them back, forgot all about it, and about 3 weeks later, I get a letter in the mail where a personal line of credit that I had was closed. So I called Wells Fargo, and to come to find out on the phone, they said, oh yeah, we've called you a couple times and it came back as your number was disconnected. We found this out through verifying my personal information and contact information and stuff like that. And they said, oh, we had that as your cell phone, and you know, it came back as disconnected. I said, well, do you use an auto dialer? And she says, I don't know. Obviously the rep probably doesn't know the details and the specs behind that, but I suspect it was probably an auto dialer, picked it up, and gave out that message because it was a robocall, and that's why I didn't get the message. So the unintended consequence there is the fact that my, you know, personal line of credit was shut off until I made that call and got it back turned on. So communicating that to the FCC, the FTC, anybody who listens in terms of regulators, I think will help. And then the downside is if they don't listen and something gets passed and we find out there are unintended consequences, then it's going to be up to the consumers to basically, who are harmed, to basically go complain to the CFPB and go complain to the app makers that they improperly blocked legitimate calls and it harmed them. And whether, you know, it's a lawsuit or a class action or something like that, that'll get the app makers and the regulators' attention, I think.
This is Alan. I agree with that. And I think the first time that a parent misses a call from their child's school, first time a hospital number is flagged as spam and they're trying to reach a next of kin, there is so many slippery slopes with that particular topic. And I agree. I think we need to be working with the ACAs and with the CRCs and working, you know, with your own companies to talk to the CFPB and to lobby your particular congressman. We had our congressman in here last year talking to him about the unique needs of our industry. So the more you can do that and the more we can talk to them, I think the better.
Yeah,
I think it's
Robert.
Go ahead, Robert.
I was going to say, I agree with everything that Matt and Alan both said, and I think just education is the key. Just, you know, making sure that the legislators are kind of educated about, you know, how our industry works and what our needs are, and, you know, the fact that we're legitimate, you know, business trying to, you know, affect the economy in a good way. I think, you know, it's tough for the elected officials to come out and say, like, I'm okay with debt collectors calling you. Like, nobody wants to be that guy, because all their constituents are like, wait a minute, I don't want bill collectors calling me. But, you know, kind of understanding that, you know, there is a legitimate need for debt collectors. And, you know, honestly, as far as, you know, we get more thank yous than we get complaints. You know, most of the time, you know, folks are happy, like, oh, I didn't even realize that would slip through the cracks. Let's get this resolved, yada, yada. And, you know, obviously some folks, you know, don't want to pay, and it is what it is. But, you know, I think that the consumers, you know, legitimately need this service that we offer and want this service. And it's just a matter of getting the legislators to understand that the majority of people pay their bill. Majority of people, you know, want to resolve their debt. It's the, you know, the minority of folks that, you know, that don't want our calls. And I think that that's really just, you know, driving that home would really help kind of trend the industry in a positive way when it comes to call blocking and spamming and such.
I agree with all of that. And I hope that nobody, including our government, allows the carriers to get away with the excuse of, well, it's just too hard. That's crazy,
right. Yes.
as an answer. So I don't get to give that excuse. Why do they? So there needs to be something that says, okay, we're legitimate business, all legitimate businesses, and they don't need to call us out by name. But, you know, I don't know that anybody that would say a legitimate business shouldn't be able to make their calls. And I agree with I'm not sure who said it, Matt or Robert.
Robert.
If I'm surprised that somebody hasn't already filed suit for tortious interference of some sort, because for when that starts happening, somebody's going to get angry. And I'm just surprised that hasn't happened yet.
Well, you know, there have been a couple of situations where there have been lawmakers or regulators who were giving a speech or during a hearing, and they hold up their phone. Look, I'm getting a robocall right now. And I think we need, you know, like there's this, you know, famous cliche, bad facts make bad laws. And I think what we need is a situation like what happened to Matt, where a senator's, you know, credit card gets canceled because he didn't, it went to voicemail and he didn't answer it. And, you know, I think, you know, he put that in front of a bunch of cameras. I think then maybe that's what it's going to take for them to realize that, you know, there are, you know, to Matt's point, unintended consequences that go along with just sort of, you know, trying to put a bright line, you know, test on what gets blocked and what doesn't. Moving on, we got another question from the audience, which is something I wanted to ask. And I know Matt talked about this a little bit, but I'd be curious to hear a little bit more from him, as well as hear from Alan and Robert on this. But the use of text messages, email, you know, this concept of an omni-channel, I love saying that word, so I say it as often as I can, omni-channel collection strategy or communication strategy, and the impact that that's having on maybe boosting right party contact rates or collection rates, you know, as you're having, you know, more and more difficulties getting in touch with someone. Is that something that is a potential, I don't want to say savior, but a potential positive for the industry moving forward?
I think absolutely. And again, I alluded to this, you know, that's becoming the preference of consumers. They don't want to talk to a debt collector on the phone. They're busy, whatever. They want to do it at that time and in the manner that's most convenient to them. And whether it's email or SMS, that's what their preference is. And like it was touched on earlier, you know, there's a good percentage of the people out there that want to pay their bills and they just need a solution or a reminder, because we're all busy. And, you know, how often is it that a bill slips through the crack and ends up in the collections? And then as soon as you get it, you know, at least for us in the industry, it's like, oh man, I forgot about that. Let me take care of that right away so I don't get a credit reported. But I absolutely believe that email, SMS, that these channels of communication are going to become used more and more and accepted and adopted. And it's just important to get clarification on the regulations and make sure you do it in a compliant manner, you know, with opt-ins and things like that and opt-outs.
Yeah, this is Alan, and I agree with that. We've found that text messaging in a limited capacity, and we're in healthcare, so in a limited capacity, we've been able to have a tremendous return on that investment and a tremendous amount of people calling back on those numbers, as well as sometimes just clicking the link to make their payment. To your point, it's they want to do it how they want to do it, when they want to do it. So I agree, both of those need to become much more allowed and much easier to be used.
And this is Robert. I would agree with both the panelists there, you know, on everything. And I think that we're trending towards that. And I think some of the issue is just the, you know, trying to, you know, be the first one to dip your toe in the pool, you know, so to say like, you know, there's, you know, even though they did release a little more clarification this year, you know, it can sometimes still be murky. There, you can sometimes still get that, you know, predatory attorney that, you know, wants to, you know, latch on to every comma in a text message. So, you know, there's a little bit more risk there, but I definitely think it's valuable. And I think that as we go into the future, that'll be kind of more and more and more common. Obviously, some of the laws kind of need to catch up to the technology, and it's obviously tough, you know, especially with the partisan politics, to be able to, you know, have the laws move as quickly as the technology is moving, and that's kind of half the battle. But, you know, I think that if you're definitely not utilizing the omnichannel approach, you're definitely losing the battle, and it's going to be an uphill climb. You know, the biggest thing for me when it comes to omnichannel is that it's much less expensive. You know, you're able to not only you know, reach the consumers you wouldn't otherwise be able to reach via phone or would prefer to be reached with this other kind of alternative method, you know, but you don't have to tie up an agent's time. You know, a lot of this can be automated. It can be something that you can quickly get these messages out, quickly get responses. You're not necessarily tying up an agent's time. And, you know, payroll is usually kind of one of the bigger line items that we all have. So I think that not only is it smart to increase contact rate, but also, you know, to decrease expenses, because if you're able to, you know, use this omni-channel approach to reach a slice of the pie of the consumer, you know, group, then you're winning, I think.
We've talked a lot about sort of, you know, the different apps and services out there, and so even the carriers are now blocking calls by default. Question that's come in with the release of iOS 13 and Siri enables call blocking, considering that Apple owns 47% of the mobile device market, how disruptive will this be to the industry? Is that something that any of you have thought of, looked into, have solutions for perhaps?
This is Alan. Our solution to that has been, and what we've been told by our vendor, is that as long as our numbers are marked as clean and legitimate, those should not be blocked. So we're hoping that that's the case. And if that is the case, then from a disruption standpoint, at least in our business, it'll be okay. If your numbers, though, are not clean and they're marked as spam, it could be extremely disruptive to that company.
And I think with the SBRA, you know, if that eventually makes it out, I believe that has a provision in there that has transparency to make sure legitimate calls don't get blocked. The question will be, how is that implemented? Is that going to be some kind of national list that all app makers have to subscribe to? So, you know, it's going to be dependent on getting clarity and some finality there.
The SBRA being the Stopping Bad Robocalls Act, for those of us that, you know, prefer to say it quicker than going through the whole name of the bill every time. Moving on, you know, it's interesting because I was looking back and I did a webinar pretty much on this topic about a year ago, which, you know, coincidentally enough, VOAP sponsored as well. And I'm curious, you know, over the course of the past year, is it a situation where you're dealing with sort of the same issues with, you know, as it pertains to call blocking now that you were a year ago? Or, you know, to your point, Alan, maybe I think what you said earlier in talking about it, it seems like it's more sort of two steps forward, one step back. Is it sort of a constant evolution in terms of how you're dealing with, you know, with what the carriers are doing and what the apps are doing? Or is it sort of still trying to figure out the same thing, you know, that you know, everyone was trying to figure out a year ago, if that makes sense?
Hey, this is Robert.
It's okay to tell me it doesn't.
Yeah, this is Robert. I would say that, you know, there, you know, Alan's assessment was accurate in that, you know, a ruling will come out and we'll think it'll go one way and, you know, the unintended consequences end up, you know, kind of driving in a different direction. I wouldn't say there's like a huge difference. I feel like where I'm at right now is kind of similar to where we were last year in terms of call blocking and spamming. And, you know, obviously I think that the technology may be getting better. And I think that the carriers, obviously, the, you know, with the Fed kind of, you know, telling them, hey, we need to get this figured out, we need to solve this problem. I think the issue there is there's just no revenue in it for them. It's like, you know, this is going to take manpower, this is going to take R&D, this is going to take this, and there's really no revenue in it for them. So, you know, it's tough. I think that it's, you know, as new, you know, rulings come out and as the call blocking kind of evolves and they offer it by default rather than as an optional service, we're going to have to wait to see how it changes. But I'd say we're kind of, you know, at the same place we were last year as far as our contact rates and answer rates. And, you know, I think it's just trying to stay one step ahead of the curve and working with, you know, a vendor that can help and you know, working with your analytical team to be able to dive into the data to, you know, combat it.
This is Matt. I'll add that, you know, I think you do, an agency's biggest fear is you don't know what you don't know. So I assess that based on my 2018 numbers and my 2019 numbers of the times I was blocked, but I only used one thing, and that was the government do not call list and the ANI checker built into our dialer. But I don't know how many times we've been blocked by apps and the different apps at that. So again, our solution or way to find that out would only be right now to be able to look at result codes that are marked invalid or out of service and then go back and look at, is that number trending or increasing up as time goes by, as we find and discover calls that, hey, you know, I actually got a right party contact on the other end. It wasn't an invalid. But then that's also dependent on the technology and the time of day, because it's possible that the dialer and or the carrier, for whatever reason, the signal got disconnected and it came back as an invalid result code. So I would just, you know, caution you that if you have some kind of strategy set up in your dialer where it looks at the result codes and you're automatically taking your invalids or disconnected numbers and sending it to skip trace, you know, that's where you want to audit, because you don't want to be wasting money skip tracing numbers that are good numbers. It's just an app that's, you know, messing you over.
Yeah, this is Alan, and I agree with all of that. I don't think in the past year that it has improved. I don't think it has worsened in the past year. 2 years ago, again, we saw a major dip right about this time. We hope that was our floor, and we've been fighting ever since to get our connect rates and our RPCs back up to pre-August of 17. That's kind of my Great Depression day, almost. So we hope that was our floor. And again, we're better now, but it is two steps forward, one step back, and it is a constant daily battle and a big effort, and it's more than effort than it should be. To me, the carrier's job is to deliver legitimate phone calls, and so I'm hoping that we can get back to that world.
Excellent. Thanks. Matt, I want to circle back to something you mentioned, because that's a really interesting point about, you know, to your, you know, what happened with you with, you know, your issue and, you know, getting the number getting disconnected. If an agency gets that report that says this number has been disconnected, if you're saying maybe don't immediately go to skip trace because that's you're spending money on something you don't need to do, how do you sort of figure out that the number actually hasn't been disconnected?
Well, for instance, what we would do is manually call it on the dialer, but in my instance, it was probably an ATDS that reached out to me and identified it as a robocall. And it's one of those where it just leaves an audit unattended message, basically, and it's not a live agent unless I were to pick up. So that's probably how UMail picked that up, and that happened to me. So again, it would be a matter of auditing your result codes that are invalid or disconnects. And the other way would be take that phone number, and even if you had cell phone permission, now maybe do a link back live campaign, do a VOAPS, you know, have a collector manually call that on some kind of a special campaign to find those calls that legitimately were marked as, or illegitimately were marked as invalid or out of service, and now they've got a right party contact on the other end, then you'll know. Doesn't necessarily mean you'll know the app unless they tell them what the app was that they used, but you'll know that your trend is going up. Did I answer your question?
Yes, sir. I just need to get my phone off mute.
Okay.
yes, you did. Thank you very much. Robert, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier when you were talking about the ROI. Can you maybe go into a little bit more detail about that and sort of how does somebody figure out the ROI on whether they should be looking at one of these vendors or should be doing more auditing, or sort of how to sort of go about figuring out, you know, where to spend the money and where they're going to get their best return?
Yeah, sure. You know, obviously it kind of starts with negotiating, you know, the best rates, right? Obviously if you negotiate the best rates for whatever you pay for your telephone numbers, your telephony costs, your new stars and your vendors that kind of help with that, you know, that'll kind of help drive the cost down. Obviously a lot of them are kind of volume pricing. So, you know, those of us that make more calls typically spend less per phone number per white list, so to say. But I mean, really and truly, you just have to kind of use your historical data to be able to look for trends. You know, obviously super high level stuff here is, you know, you just look to say like, you know, okay, our RPC rate just dipped, you know, 2%. What does that mean in terms of, you know, whole value RPCs? And then with your conversion rate, you say, okay, what is that costing us? You know, it's costing us $10,000 a month. There's a vendor that's willing to help whitelist for $5,000 a month. And doing so, we get our RPC percent back to, you know, what it was previously or even higher. And then, you know, just do the simple math and you can say, hey, that makes sense. You know, if your RPC rate drops 2% and it's costing you 10 grand, but the vendor wants to charge you 20 grand, or it's going to cost 20 grand to replace the numbers at the rate you want to replace them at, you know, obviously it's a lose. So you really just have to look at the cost of the strategy that you want to do, and really testing is the biggest thing that will help, you know, a collection agency or any kind of someone that's dialing numbers and math to be able to say, you know, looking at the numbers, analyzing them in a, you know, in an A/B test scenario to say, okay, you know, we're not going to do anything with these numbers. We're just going to see what we get. And then, you know, a similar type campaign, we're going to use the whitelisting, or we're going to swap out the numbers at this cadence and, you know, really kind of compare to say like, you know, wow, we are seeing an increase of 20% on our RPCs, and that is worth X amount of dollars, and the vendor charges X amount, and home run, you know. So you really just have to stay on top of what it's costing you to be as efficient as possible. And if it's costing you more than you're making from that investment, it's a lose, and you just have to look at something else. There's something else that you can do. Maybe it's a cheaper option that you can you know, use to employ to try to get that RPC number back up to where it was, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever the data set you're looking at.
That I agree with all of that. That's really good stuff. We also are looking at our inbound return rates. So are we getting callbacks, or are people just flat out not calling back? So that's another one that we look at very closely. But yeah, absolutely. If the ROI has to be there, you do have to negotiate the rates. It is always a volume driven type of a thing. So the more calls you get, so but on a ratio basis, you should be fairly similar with whether you're small or whether you're a large company.
Excellent. Thank you. A couple more questions that are coming in. I want to try and get to before we run out of time. Can you please touch on the TCPA and if direct drop voicemail is a way around this? Let's see. I think maybe it's a way around the TCPA, but maybe anyone wants to weigh in on how direct drop voicemail, if you're using it or if you looked at it, and any insights you can share on the product itself.
This is Matt. I've used it. I've used the sponsor of this program, BoApps, for years and years. It's very successful. I've had no issues with it. And they have a white paper that explains how the technology works and why it doesn't, you know, go out to the carrier network. It goes through the background. I can't really explain it other than I've heard, you know, it drops it on the voicemail server, so therefore it's not hitting the carrier network. But from a response rate, I can tell you when we run a VoApps campaign, my floor is humming compared to when we're just doing, you know, ATDS. So we do a combination of SMS, email. We do leaving messages all and VoApps, all to drive the inbound. So we basically operate as an inbound call center. That's our strategy.
Awesome. Excellent. Anyone else want to add on top of that?
This is Alan. We're not currently using it, but Matt, I may need to pick your ear a little bit.
All right. Awesome. Excellent. Matt, you get the commission, I'm sure. One other question. Can the panelists elaborate on the concept of a waitlist, registering legitimate numbers with service providers not to block? The question is, why isn't everyone using this approach?
This is Robert. So I think the hardest thing there is just kind of getting everyone on the same page. You know, you got multiple carriers, multiple networks, you know, thousands of companies making billions of calls. So I think it's just tough to get everyone on the same page so that, you know, we can actually get that enacted. I mean, in high level, in theory, it makes, you know, too much sense, right? It's like, okay, here are all of our legitimate businesses and all of their legitimate telephone numbers, whitelist them all, never mark them as spam. But I think just getting everybody on the same page, and I think with spoofing, that really, you know, kind of messes things up too, because, you know, you can spoof any number you'd like. So all I have to do as a scammer is find a legitimate business, get one of their numbers, and then boom, I'm in. So I think that's just the biggest thing, but I think that it needs to happen, and I think that it definitely is coming.
This is Alan. I agree with that. And we have been currently advised that there is no such thing as a industry-wide white list of any sort. Again, that falls into that area of it's too hard, and I don't think that should be the right answer. But it's my understanding that there's not currently anything that is truly a white list. And if there was, I wouldn't have to pay a vendor to keep my numbers clean.
This is Matt. I'll add to that. You know, my wish list is for Shaken and Stir and the Stop Bad Robocall Act, for that to basically make our government come up with something that, number one, is transparent and free, and will stop the spoofing, because you're authenticating the call from the caller all the way to the callee, no matter where it's going. And I think that will help. But I think, number one, my wish list would be, number one, there is a single national database, so you don't have to pay a vendor if you don't want to, and that you can register your number, and it's good as long as, you know, you own that number.
I'll second that notion.
I'll third it. And I'm sure Robert will fourth it. We've just about run out of time, and I apologize if we didn't get to all the questions, but before we wrap up today, I'd like to go around the panel one more time and give each of our panelists one more chance to share any parting words of wisdom, any takeaways, anything they wanted to talk about, but maybe didn't get a chance to because the conversation just didn't go in that direction, but they still think it's important and relevant to the topic. But just to give them a chance to summarize their thoughts if they want, if they don't mind. Matt, would you mind going first?
Sure. I'll dedicate this to the person who's getting back into the industry. When I first got into this industry many, many years ago, I luckily was with a hospital-owned agency that had an auto dialer, and we were using it. We were, you know, pretty successful with that. But I know at the same time I would go to national meetings, either National Healthcare Collectors Association or ACA International, and I would hear about agency owners that had been in the industry for years and they absolutely refused to use a dialer. They felt it was slower, whatever. Anyway, through the years, as they passed, we saw these agencies basically start adopting that technology. So just like now we have email and SMS available, you know, obviously you want to do it in a compliant manner, but I would encourage you to look at it, because if you don't and you're just using the way it used to, it's the way we've done it for years and years and years, you're going to get left behind.
Don't want anybody left behind. Robert, you're up.
Yeah, sure. So I would say, you know, as far as a closing statement, I would just say, you know, spend money on a good, you know, employee or a group of employees that know data, you know, they can dig into the data, because it's there. The answer is there. You know, obviously, while the government and the carriers and the ACA and us, you know, work towards coming up with a great solution, you know, by digging into your data, I could almost guarantee you'll be able to find improvements. And, you know, I think that a lot of, you know, a lot of us spend money, most of our money on, you know, our operations. It makes sense. You know, your operators, the guys that are in the trenches, running the teams and, you know, running, you know, units and offices. But, you know, you got to think about the support staff folks, you know, especially those that are kind of digging into your data and, you know, giving the operations team a, you know, trends and graphs and charts and things that you can look at that you can say, okay, you know, the answer is here. We just need to look at it, dive in, slice it up and make a decision. And then, you know, with the testing and, you know, gauging your results, I think that would be the biggest thing to take home for, you know, the call blocking. For right now, that would be the first thing that you should do after this call. Dig into the data.
Awesome. Excellent. I'm going to get my shovel. Alan, you're up.
Sure. Real quickly, I would say control what you can control. Make sure you are still using the basics of, you know, your call center management. Don't give your people who are returning your calls many excuses to hang up quickly. I would say keep a close eye on your statistics. I would say lobby your congressman, congresswoman. Make sure you're doing that and we're getting our words out and our news out. Definitely look at your measurables every day, every week, every month. Make sure you're looking at those daily. You're looking at them over time. You're looking at all of those things. So I would say good luck with it and keep on doing the two steps forward and one step back, because you're still going forward at that point.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, Robert, Alan, Matt, thank you so much for your time and insights today. I really appreciate it. This webinar would definitely not have been possible without your participation. So thank you for sharing. I also want to thank VOAPS one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.voaps.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated. I hope we got to as many of the questions as we could. If we didn't, I apologize. It wasn't intentional. Tried to get to as many as we could. One final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey that should be popping up soon or in your email tomorrow, and give me any ideas for any other webinars you want to hear or learn more about. And I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Panel, excellent job. You guys get to take the rest of the day off. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike.